Welcome to Carituals. This is Wendy.
And this is Amanda.
Today's cast, using an influence or stakeholder map to improve your relationships. Part one of one.
The questions that this cast answers are, what is an influence map? Why would I use an influence map? And when would I use an influence map?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
West Coast, here we come. We'll be in Seattle January 21st through 22nd for our EMC and ECC. It's time to set intentions for the year, and we can help get you started on the right track at work. Effectiveness could be your 2025 goal. In management and communication, we can help. January 21st and 22nd in Seattle, effective management and effective communication. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
If you've never listened to a Career Tools cast before, you won't know this, but everybody who has listened to more than one will have heard this more than once, which is a successful career depends on two things, the relationships you have and the results you get. And in early in your career, the results carry more weight because you're doing tasks, you're actually responsible for enacting things. But that doesn't mean that you can ignore relationships, because as you progress through your career, the relationships become even more important. And so if you started early, you can use the connections you have that you had, that you kept for better results. You also develop the relationship habit early, which means that as the pressure mounts, as your job gets bigger, you still have that habit of keeping in touch with people and developing relationships with them. And third, you'll have a strong network built up by the time you reach the stage where relationships matter more than results. If that's confusing, a manager's results come from the work that somebody, that his team does, and therefore it's relationships. That's why relationships is more important later on. So in this guidance, we're going to talk about how you can use a stakeholder or an influence map. I think they're the same thing, they're just different names, as a personal tool for improving your relationships.
So what we're going to cover in this podcast is map your current relationships, then identify your influential but weak relationships, and then lastly, build your relationship strategy.
So the first thing we have to do, like any first step of any project, is know where you are. So assessing the current state of your relationships is exactly like every other project. You need to know where your relationships are, who you have relationships with, and how strong they are before you start. And stakeholder or influence maps are often used to do this by teams or companies when they start a new project or if they're working with a specific customer group, but you can also use them to assess your own relationships.
An influence map is a simple visual tool that plots people according to two factors: their level of influence in your work environment and the strength of your relationship with them. Now, know that there are many more complex versions for teams and companies to use. At its simplest, it's a graph with influence on one axis and the relationship strength on the other. The scale on which that you use on each axis doesn't really matter. You can use a 1 to 5, a 1 through 10, or even just low, medium, or high. What matters is that you know what each score means and that you are able to apply it consistently every time you plot information. So if you can't remember how you're going to rate it, pick a different system.
Yeah, because we're going to do this over time. And so we need to be able to compare results or compare the state at a later time to the state it's in now to judge the results. And so the measure has to be the same. And you can use this tool in multiple ways, which we're going to talk about in a bit. But the first step and the most simple step is just to map your current team. And you literally don't need anything but a sheet of paper and a pen. In fact, you could do it on a post-it note. So you just draw the two axes. So draw an L shape like you would for a graph. And then plot the person with the most influence on your career on one axis and how strong your relationship with them is on the other axis. So you just put a dot, it's somewhere on that sheet within the square of the graph, which represents influence and the strength of your relationship. And we start with the person with the most influence because it's easier to judge. And then you can plot everybody else in relation to that that level of influence and that level of relationship.
And the person with the most influence on what happens to your work is probably your direct manager, specifically the person who writes your annual review, right? That person that has the most say in your future. They have the most control over your pay and your prospects in the longer term. It might not be so obvious in a complex matrix organization of who has the most influence, especially when it might not be the same person who gives you those daily assignments. It's easy to get caught up in the day-to-day work and focus on the person assigning the tasks, but don't confuse frequent contact with real influence. The person you interact with most often isn't necessarily the one who has the most impact in your career. So when considering who has the most influence, think of who's more in charge of your long-term career influence, right? Mm-hmm. Not just necessarily the person that you talk about or talk to every day or is just assigning out tasks. Especially consider this in those matrix organizations.
Of course, the person with the most influence on your career is yourself, but we didn't plot ourselves on the graph because we know we have the most influence and we have a good relationship with ourselves, hopefully. So we just
hopefully.
We started with the person outside of yourself in the organization. So once you've plotted the person with the most influence, you can plot the rest of your team relative to that where you've plotted that person. And by definition, all of those people will have less influence, right? We started with the person with the most influence, and therefore everybody else we put on there has to have less influence. So they'll be lower than that person on the graph, assuming that you used influence on the horizontal axis. It actually doesn't matter which way you do it, but we'll use influence on the horizontal axis. If influence is on the horizontal axis, everybody else will be to the left of them because they're the person with the most influence, because that's why we started. But they could be lower or higher depending on your assessment of your relationship with them, because we're assessing relationship on the vertical axis.
So how do you assess relationship strength? We have another tool that we introduced some years ago that you can use, the communication matrix. It plots your relationship with someone on two axes. The frequency of communication, the more often you communicate, the better the relationship, and the quality of the communication, which means that the proportion of conversation that matters to them, the quality, if it matters to both people or only to one. We explain this in depth in the guidance, Measuring Relationships, Chapter 2, The Communication Matrix. So if you're wondering how to better assess your relationships, listen to that podcast or read the show notes if you have a license.
Yes. So you can approach this in two ways. You can either plot the relationships directly on the influence map using your gut feel, or you can first create a separate communication matrix to analyze them systemically. And we'd recommend taking the time to map it out first, because your perception of relationships is often skewed by our own biases. You know, we have all sorts of biases, including the one that just came to mind, the recency bias, literally because I talked about it yesterday. And so that's why I just proved that the thing you remember is the thing you did most, you did last. And so when you think about a relationship with a specific person, you probably only think about the last conversation or the last meeting you were in, unless you're kind of deliberately slowing down and thinking about that over a longer period and thinking about it more deeply. And getting it down on paper often helps to reveal the blind spots. Sometimes, like, you'll miss somebody out from your team, like completely forget they're in your team. Or you might, like we were saying earlier, give someone a lot of influence because you talk to them a lot. And then when you think about it, actually, they don't have that much influence over what happens to you. They just happen to be either the person who gives you work or the person who takes work from you. And so it's not quite as easy as it sounds. You have to kind of slow down a little bit.
Especially when you're using data. If you're using a scale of like 1 to 10 and you think about each person, you're like, oh, well, I mean, I feel like I have a better relationship with this person than this person. It gives you more of a comparison point to really not be biased, because I mean, some of us just love everybody. High eyes. That's so great.
Yeah.
But when you are like, I have to put a number or a word, low, medium, or high to it, it really helps you figure out the true data behind it.
And the other thing you could do is like get to the end and then realize like you don't have any more numbers for the person who you did last. You started with 1 to 10 and you want to rank this person 1 or less than one of the other people that you've ranked 1, and there aren't any more numbers. You have to go into minus numbers, I guess, or negative numbers. But that will tell you you didn't judge the other people correctly. So you might go through the team once and then want to do it again once you've kind of got an idea of the ranking in your mind.
Yeah, I would say the reverse of that is everyone's a 10 because yes. We don't like to mark people down for things. But if everyone on your team is a 10, you got to start again.
Yeah, that's the difference between a high D and a high I. A high D is like, I'm going to mark everybody 1. That's because high Ds are not good at relationships. And a high I marks everybody as 10 because everyone's their best friend. And I'd suggest if you're a high C, while we're talking about DISC profiles, if you're a high C, use high, medium, or low. Because if you use 1 to 10, you'll want 7.25, and this will take you way too long. So using a simpler scale may help you get through this.
Give the gift of a head start this holiday season. Starting a career can be challenging, but with the Manager Tools interviewing series, you can help someone ace their first job interview and set them up for success. A Career Tools license includes the interviewing series and so much more to support their journey. With a Career Tools license, they'll receive ad-free podcasts with comprehensive show notes, exclusive bonus content, tailored digital products, the MT DISC profile to enhance relationships and communication skills, and while you give them the gift of new opportunities, treat yourself too. Purchase a license before December 31st and receive a free 2025 career planning workbook for yourself. Make this holiday season one of growth and opportunity for both of you. Go to www.manager-tools/gift for more details.
So the next thing you do once we've actually plotted the people is identify your influential but weak relationships. So based on the graph you've drawn, the people who are the higher end of the influence scale, but the lower end of the relationship scale. So those people who have impact on your career, but you don't have a great relationship with them. And if you concentrate on your relationship, improving your relationship with those people, obviously that will get you the most results because those people have more influence. If you start with the person who has very little influence, you're putting a lot of effort in for not a lot of reward. If you start with the person that has the most influence, but you have a weak relationship with them, you get the maximum reward for the effort that you're about to put in.
And when it comes to building relationships, again, if you're new to this podcast, we talk a lot about relationships. It does take time. It takes time to build relationships. It takes months, not just days. There is no magical fix for a relationship. One email will not magically improve the relationship, even if it's a really good email. Also, there's a fact that email doesn't build relationships at all. So even if it's really good, it's not going to help. And you also cannot cram 3 months of relationship building into a week of intense communication.
That will freak somebody out.
Right. You're like, oh, I got to make up time. Let's spend the evening together and we're just going to be best friends. You will scare them away. It won't work. Might work for that 3 hours, but long term, that's not how you build relationships. It will probably backfire. If you normally talk to someone once a month and then now you're suddenly reaching out daily, it will feel kind of forced. That's why it's a slower process. You do have to get to know people. You can't go from ghosting them to talking to them 3 times a day, right? And they might read into that, not with the best intentions.
Exactly.
Right?
Especially if they have a lot of influence over your career, right? It's like, oh, this person is suddenly coming around me at review time when I've got a lot of influence and now they're talking to me every day instead of once every 3 months. Oh, yeah, that could definitely be misread.
It's weird how they talk to me every day in November and really just lean into the holidays. But then come January, I never hear from them.
Yeah.
Right. Now, instead of coming in hot, as the kids say, gradually increase your regular contact. The good news is that because relationship building is slow, steady process, you can work multiple relationships simultaneously. So we said pick out the most influential person and start there. But because it's a slower process, once you get rolling, you can do this with multiple people. And it doesn't take nearly as much bandwidth if you have to spend 3 hours a day every day with them, which we are not recommending.
Exactly.
Gradual.
Yes. So the next thing is to build the relationship strategy. So the strategy you're going to use to increase your relationship. And the base of any relationship building strategy is simple. Communicate more often about the things that matter to that person. And everybody is different. Obviously, everybody is unique. But you can start with two factors, their organizational relationship with you and their MT DISC profile. So if you don't know what MT DISC is, it's a way of looking at people's behaviors and then making some educated assumptions about the way they look at work and people. So people are either task focused or people focused. HIDs are task focused. If they come into the room, they have a list and they want to check off everything in the list and leave again. High I's are people focused. So if they come into the room, they want to tell you about their weekend, hear about your weekend, go get a Starbucks, and then maybe think about the checklist. The other dimension is assertive and reserved. So the high D and the high I are both assertive, and the high C and the high S are both reserved. So an S is people focused and reserved. So unlike the high I, who's just going to walk into the room and start telling you about their weekend, the high S will come in quietly and make sure you're ready to have a conversation and then ask you about their about your weekend. The high C is reserved and task focused. So they come in with their list, but instead of three high level topics like a high D would have, because they like to be fast, because they're assertive, the high C will have each of those high level topics broken down into 25 other bullets because they like precision and accuracy. So that was my 20-second high D, 20-second MT DISC.
Nice brief overview. But we do have a lot of podcasts that cover this. Yes. If you want more information, they're good. They might be some of my favorites. Now, organizationally, people want information that helps them do their job better or more easily. Take your boss, for example. Every boss needs task-focused information about what you're doing and its status. But now how they want this information varies based on their MT DISC profile. So what Wendy was just talking about, she gave you a quick overview. But in this specific example, we're going to walk through each of the profiles and what their boss wants or how they want that information delivered. Because at the end of the day, quality communication comes from the listener getting something out of it. So in this example, we're going to use your boss. Now, if you have a high D boss, they want just the facts, nothing more. They want you to come in, give them the information, and then get out because they value time and they want to get moving. Now, if you have a high C boss, they want detailed facts and data. They want to know everything that went into making that decision. They want to know the data that supports that decision, any of the information that they need to know going forward. If you have a high I boss and really high S bosses, because again, they're people-oriented, they want to know about who you're working with and will prefer starting with some small talk. Now, know that your high I boss might get derailed with small talk into other things, so you might have to circle back because they thrive on building a relationship with you through chatting. So start with small talk. Hi, hello, how are you? And then get into the information. And your high S bosses, they want to understand how everyone feels about the work because they're coming from a very people-focused profile. So they want to not only know about the work, but how is the team doing? How is the work impacting everybody involved? So they come from wanting to know about the team as well.
And no matter who it is, everybody cares about their family and the things they do outside of work. That's what makes us unique, I guess, but also all the same in that everybody cares about their family. And that's not to say that you should include this in every communication. Don't ask a high D every time you send them the facts how their family are, because it'll just drive you nuts. But This is just to remind you that even the high Ds or the high Cs, who are focused on facts, are actually people too, and they still care about their family and what they do outside of work. They just have a very focused way of approaching conversations, and they want to get out of it what they want to get out of it, rather than a high I who's happy to sit there for 20 minutes talking about anything.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's different motivations at work versus home that really lean into that. High Ds and high Cs really want to get work done at work. In high I's and high S's, they really like to have people relationships at work because that's how they get the work done. But at home, the motivation's different because no one's getting paid to be at home. So we love our people once we're outside of work.
So now we have a strategy. All we have to do is implement it and reassess using the influencer map every quarter. So you implement the strategy and magically all your relationships improve. Actually, it would be magically, because it does make a difference communicating with people about what they care about in the style that they want to receive that communication. Like, it's not magical thinking, because that's how it works. It just works. Everybody in Manager Tools always says, when I learned this, it was the one thing that made the biggest change in my career. I'm definitely one of those people. Mm-hmm. And I learned about DISC. I was like, oh, that's why those people are like that. And that's why I'm like this. And that's why I wind them up. And just making the difference of, for a high D like me, toning off the corners, like rounding off the corners of your spiky personality, makes a difference. And it is like magic. And in 3 months, you run through the exercise again, assessing the influence on relationships, and decide whether or not you need to begin to concentrate on another relationship. Because your relationships are going to change relative to each other and the organizational changes. So that means you might need to include new people because they've been added to your team or your circle of influence, or they've gone away from your team. So you'll be adding and subtracting people. Sometimes you're working on a project with someone, and so they have a lot of influence, and then that project ends and you start some other work, and then that person doesn't have influence. So it is a constantly changing map, and it's stable enough that you can use a every quarter refresh to judge the results of your work in between.
Yeah, and just know that if you're making progress on certain folks. Now, as you've gone forth and you're making the effort, you're trying to build the better relationships, depending on the influence of people, there is a pitfall that you need to avoid. And it's going to be to focus intensely on one relationship for a few months and then to drop it completely when you shift focus to someone else. So we talked earlier about you can do multiple relationships at one time, but what you don't want to do is work really hard on one and then drop them just to focus on someone else. Because I would say after 3 months of that, if you look back on how your relationship is with the first person, it's not going to be great, right? Think of relationship building more as like working out. You can't just stop exercising one muscle group when you start working on another. You need to maintain the improved communication patterns you've created while adding new ones. So it's a constant cycle of assessing, still maintaining what you've worked on, maybe working on new things and shifting focus just a little bit. And each relationship upgrade should become your new baseline. So if you build a better relationship with one person and they move up on your scale, the next time you reassess, that's their new ground zero. It's not, oh, well, now I've lost it because you've hit a bump in a road, right? So that becomes their new neutral, I would say. And then you want to move up from there. Never stop, because it will definitely impact your relationship with people that you've put in a lot of effort and work to.
And with practice, any skill, including building and maintaining relationships, becomes easier. And so adding more to your plate may sound daunting now, but in 3 months, you'll have built those muscles which allow you to do so. I always think of learning to drive. The way I learned to drive was they put you in a car with an instructor and you just go on the streets, because I'm old enough that they didn't have written exams and things. But I can remember driving, having an instruction for an hour, and then coming back to the house and being absolutely exhausted and not being able to have the radio on because I couldn't concentrate on two things at once. And now, obviously, you drive without thinking. All of it is automatic, as you always find out when you have a rental car and you discover that you're turning the windscreen wipers on all the time when you're trying to indicate. But you've ingrained that habit, the muscle memory, the ability to do that. And now you can do two things at once, listen to the radio and drive a car. And it's the same with this relationship building as well. Even though you're having to put in a bunch of effort in the beginning, and it feels like there's no way I could do this for two people, like pay attention to the last time I spoke to them, pay attention to what they care about, pay attention to the way they want to communicate. Oh, I can't do this for two people. But by the time you've got to 3 months, you'll have built some muscle and systems and your own way of doing it, and it will feel easier, and you will be able to take on another person.
So not every corporate tool works for personal use, but influence maps are different. While most people focus on building technical skills, which are relatively straightforward to acquire, your career success depends on developing both technical and relationship skills. So use this tool, build these skills early, and you'll find yourself ahead of those who focus solely on technical expertise.
The technical stuff is always easy. I can go on a course. I can learn how to use a Google script. The relationship stuff is hard, which is why if you're good at it, if you practice, if you build that skill, you will differentiate yourself from everybody else. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Wendy.
We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye.